UK Wine Show, show number 461. Kelvin Duo with Stephen Parker. Hello and welcome to the UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Stephen Parker. Stephen is the inventor of Kelvin. Kelvin is a pun, Kelvin as in the temperature scale, and Kel and Vin, Vin for wine, gives you an idea of what it's all about. It's all about measuring and getting the serving temperature right for your bottle of wine. We're going to be talking to him about the product, and I think it'll probably make a fabulous Christmas present to the wine lover in your life. This week, been a pretty good week for me. I'm still waiting on Apple to approve Finovino. It's been in the queue now for a while. I'm expecting it any day, so we'll get onto that when we get onto that. But I've had the guys, we've got the new database up for Finovino for the new version, etc. And we're starting to do all the international wine spirit competitions, Southern Hemisphere results. We're adding a new retailer called Perfect Cellar to the app. And we're also adding the drinks business Shiraz Masters. In fact, we're going to be talking about the Shiraz Masters in the news. So let's get straight into the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Well, first up this week, winemakers watched on as Mount Etna sent lava erupting up to 8 kilometres into the sky after its first eruption in 2 years. Vinyards luckily remained unscathed, but maybe that wasn't the outcome they were wanting. After the lava eruption, there was a huge plume of ash. And as Christian Listro of Tenuto del Terra Nera explained, these ash emissions from the new southeast crater are greatly beneficial due to their fertilising effect. Sadly, the last time actual lava from Etna reached the vineyards was way back in 1981.
The Earth's core is full of all sorts of minerals, and once they weather in, the nutrients will eventually become accessible to plants. Big eruptions can have two effects. In the short term, if there's enough ash spewed into the atmosphere, they can block the sun and cause lower temperatures. However, in the long term, eruptions tend to pump lots of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In fact, I think it's generally agreed that without the constant supply of CO2 from volcanoes, Earth's atmosphere would have been stripped away billions of years, a bit like Mars. Frozen planet cores don't give any magnetic protection either, so you need that molten lava core, and hence the volcanoes, to provide the protection we need from the sun's UV rays, and to limit the solar winds stripping away our atmosphere. So, very important, old volcanoes. It's not just those lovely nutrients that the vines like. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, the Global Syrah Masters Awards from the drinks business, which were judged in September, were released this week with 150 Syrahs from 14 different countries. At the entry level, judges were looking for deep colour, juicy fruit and full-bodied softness. At the top end, they were seeking the aromatic perfumed Cote Roti style. 131 of the 150 wines received a medal. 25 were awarded gold and 4 the top accolade of master, including a Dallas Hermitage Rouge Domaine de Tourette from France, Casella 1919 Brands from Australia, Richardson Reserve Shiraz from the Blue Pyrenees Estate, and one which came from Switzerland. The competition noted there was an evolution in the style of New World Syrah towards elegance and restraint and away from high alcohol monsters of the past.
I don't mind the big monster Shirazes from time to time. I also like those nice, lighter styles. In fact, I don't mind Syrah at all, actually. But Shiraz/Syrah is one of those grape varieties. I think a lot of people undervalue it. It can be bigger and better balanced than Cabernet Sauvignon, and it does have some lovely varietal characteristics, such as pepper in the more moderate climates, but also they generally have a nice bit of blackberry, even getting into those sort of leathery flavours you see in Aussie Shirazes. So quite a nice, interesting wine. So we'll be loading up the results. Oh, in fact, we are loading up the results to the Shiraz Masters from the drinks business as we speak. So when the new version of Finovino comes out in the next couple of days, you'll be able to get it then. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, finally this week, a recent Nielsen report shows that the country with the highest average price for a bottle of wine in the UK is New Zealand. Its wines sell for an average of £7.37 a bottle, which is well above the overall UK average price of £5.46. New Zealand's the leading country in the UK in more premium categories, in particular in the £7 to £8 price bracket, where it's grown 23% year on year. And in all price categories over £7, New Zealand is now second to France in both volume and value terms. Overall, while the UK wine market declined 2% last year, New Zealand saw a 10% increase. Sauvignon Blanc remains the most popular New Zealand wine, with UK consumers at least, and New Zealand is growing its share of total Sauvignon Blanc sales with a 39% market share. So well done, New Zealand. We're heading over there soon, so you won't hear from us for a little while. So happy Christmas to you all and a happy new year. That's all from me this week.
As Jane said, we're heading off to New Zealand, going to Australia and then New Zealand for a while. Hopefully I'll be recording a few podcasts when I'm out there. I'll also be enjoying some of the New Zealand Sirahs. They didn't perform particularly well in the Sirah Masterclass. They did get a reasonable number of awards, but it didn't dominate as I was sort of expecting, because New Zealand Sirahs have been particularly good, but maybe they're just a little bit pricey, perhaps. Just before we get into the interview, don't forget we run our wine tastings throughout the UK. In fact, this week we've added a new wine tasting weekend break. Historically, we've done them in Market Bosworth, which is near Coventry, but we're moving it to Basingstoke, which is just outside of London. So it's a nice, easy journey out. It's easy to get there by the train and then a quick taxi, etc. And it is in the Basingstoke Country Hotel. So it's just outside of Basingstoke in the country with lots of fields nearby and all that sort of stuff, those lovely walks. What you'll do is you'll turn up. It's £149 for two nights accommodation and a full day's tasting. That's based on a twin share. And you'll get lunch, a couple of meals in there, full board, etc. So really exceptional value and a full day's wine tasting. It's fabulous. We've only got one date in the diary and it will sell out pretty quickly, I'm pretty sure. So if you are interested, just Google 3050 weekend wine tasting or go to our website, click on gift experiences and you'll see a list for weekend wine tasting. So that's at Basingstoke, just outside of London. So all exciting, but we don't forget we do our wine tastings throughout the UK. I was having a look at all the locations we run now. They're in London, Norwich, Leicester, Liverpool, Manchester, Bristol, Cardiff, Basingstoke, as we just said, a great Misserton, where we do some one-day wine courses in Hampshire, and Sheffield. So we're all over the UK, covering a fairly good range of the UK now for our courses. Our prices range from £29 per person up to £109. We introduced a champagne day tasting. We've been running champagne evening courses for £39 for a while in London. They've been very, very popular. So we're now running those in some of the other towns that we run our courses in. And we've launched a one-day champagne and sparkling wine tasting. So definitely, definitely something to enjoy. So a wine tasting, perfect gift to give to one of your friends. You can give them a date. So you want to say, look, we're going to a particular date in February. That's fabulous. Or you can give them an open-dated voucher. Just come onto our website, click open data voucher, and then they can redeem it for against any of our events throughout the country and at any date. The only assumption being that there is a availability on the date that they're looking for. So our one-day wine courses, our evening tastings, you can get vouchers for that for most of the UK. So please, please, please do consider supporting the show by getting a voucher or a one-day wine course or a course for your friends. Okay, let's get into the interview. And as I said at the top of the show, we're going to be interviewing Stephen Parker. As I said, Stephen invented Kelvin and the Kelvin Duo, which is a wine temperature reader. It's a remote-controlled wine temperature reader. Let's have a listen to what he has to say about serving temperatures and the Kelvin Duo. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Stephen Parker. How are you, Stephen?
Yeah, very well. Good to be here.
Excellent, excellent. We're recording this, recording this in my dining room. Usually I go to people, but you're kind enough to come to visit me in Twickenham.
Very nice it is too.
Yeah, I tell you what, and we just moved house here and in the old days, in the old house, the only room that had any decent acoustics was my bedroom. So I used to take everybody up to my bedroom and say, don't worry about it, love. We're just going up to my bedroom. You're going to see my stamp collection or something. So it's a lot more respectful now, respectable, I suppose, now. But Stephen, we're here to talk about Kelvin.
Yes, the product's called Kelvin Duo, and Kelvin One Product is the name of the company. We'll get to the website in a bit. But Kelvin, with the idea of the Kelvin thermometer scale and also Kelvin, Vim, we're being wine. We're all about wine temperature, you see.
Wine temperature, okay. So that's quite an interesting thing, old wine temperature. A lot of people drink wines at the same temp. You know, I drink my whites cool and my reds warmed, and everything seems to be okay. But a lot of people get very excited about the serving temperature. My mum gave me a wine thermometer that you're supposed to put in the top of the bottle once when she thought I was in the wine trade, and said, well, this would be useful for you. But I never took it out of the drawer, to be honest. It wasn't really something. I found it a bit silly to open a bottle, put a thermometer in it, wait and see if you could read the temperature. It just seemed like awfully a lot of effort.
Yeah, sure. Certainly, we believe that wine temperature can make a big difference to how wine tastes. And what we're looking to help people do is to understand that the vast majority of wine drinkers drinking their white wines directly from the fridge and their red wines at room temperature, they're not necessarily getting the very best out of their wines, particularly certain wines. And there's lots of different examples of that. A lot of wines will actually have a recommended serving temperature on the back of the bottle. I mean, I brought one in with me today, Chris. It's not that I'm particularly talking about the quality of the wine in any way, but it's
Campo Viejo is not too bad.
It's a Campo Viejo. It's very, I mean, if you showed it to the even the most average wine drinker, they would almost certainly say that they would recognize that bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And we were showing our product at the Ideal Home exhibition at Christmas, and we were talking to people about wines, and I showed them this bottle, and everyone would recognize it. And I said, most people said, of course, they would just open the bottle at the room temperature at the time, 22 degrees, and they would serve it at that temperature and be relatively happy with it. But on the back of the bottle, it actually says serve at 15 to 16 degrees.
Mm.
So there's quite a significant difference between how the manufacturer or the vineyard say that you should serve the wine and how most people are actually serving it. And we believe it makes a big difference. And it's the same with white wines. I mean, I was telling you, Chris, earlier about how I actually came up with the concept of the importance of wine temperature, because I'm a thermometer designer. I've been designing thermometers for years. My first product was a nursery thermometer, which reduces the risk of cot death by helping parents to understand what the ideal temperature for a nursery should be, because it's much cooler than most people would expect. 16 to 20 degrees is the recommendation by the NHS in Britain, at least. And I said that's much cooler, and probably most people think actually it's far too cool for a baby. But actually, in terms of reducing the risk of cot death, it's actually very important that they sleep in a cool room, and that the baby will sleep much more comfortably, and it'll cry less, and it'll be just generally much happier, which makes everyone happier. So we realised in that particular stage that temperature is important. And the way I dealt with that I'd created a nightlight, and the nightlight changed colour to tell you when the nursery was the perfect temperature. So when it's too cold, it was blue, which wasn't very often. When it's too warm, it went orange and red. And when it's the perfect temperature, it was a nice nightlight, a yellow colour. So people understood the temperature really well. So I used to live above a majestic wine warehouse, which is a fantastic place to live, let me tell you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I felt I
learned. Especially now that you can buy by the bottle.
Yeah, I learned a huge amount when I lived there. And I got to know the guys in there very well. And the manager, who got a feeling for what I like to drink, he pulled me out a Californian Chardonnay and said, you've got to try this. It's a real favourite. We don't have it in all the time. Give it a go. And I bumped into him a couple of days later, and he said, what do you think? I said, well, you know, it was okay. You know, it wasn't, I don't know, I just didn't enjoy it that much. And he said, well, what temperature did you serve it at? And I said, because, as you can tell, I'm fairly early in my wine journey, I'd done what I'd done with every other bottle of wine, and that was get it nice and cold in the fridge and get it really chilled and try it. And, of course, it would taste much thinner and with much less taste than it should have done. And so he said, well, no, you've ruined it. You really need to be serving that at 12 or 13 degrees. So I went back tried the rest of the bottle, and you know, it tasted so much better. So I'm thinking, okay, well, if I didn't know this, then surely there's a huge amount of people that don't know about this as well. But that also had me thinking to myself, now here I am, I've got 4 degrees fridge temperature, I've got 22 degrees average room temperature. How on earth am I going to serve something at 12 or 13 degrees? I mean, most people have only got their fridge.
I was going to say a wine fridge, that's how you do it.
Yeah, well, wine fridges are great. And of course, you know, that they're great. But of course, what you're going to get coming out the wine fridge is all your wines at the same temperature. But nevertheless, they're much, much better than a standard fridge for chilling, for wine service as well, of course. But your average wine drinker who doesn't have a wine fridge, they want to serve it at 12 degrees. So how do they do it? And so that was really the challenge. And that's how we started thinking about wine temperature and how could we help make it really easy for people to serve their wines as the manufacturers recommend it. We're not telling people how they should serve it, but we're just saying that this is the baseline for this wine as far as the manufacturer's concerned. Now, if you serve it a little bit cooler, it'll taste like, then of course you'll get one result. If you serve it a little bit warmer, you'll get another result, and then you can decide which you prefer.
Okay, so the product itself, what I think we'll do is we'll just have a wee experiment with the product, and then we'll talk about the different serving temperatures and how the wines change and all that sort of stuff, which I think is quite cool. So you said it was the Calvin Duo. So what is it made up of?
Okay, so we have a clip which goes on the bottle. You can imagine, how would you describe that?
It looks like a smart band that you'd wear on your wrist.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. So it just clips onto the bottle. It does any size from a little bit thinner than this. I'm obviously holding a Campo Viejo in my hand, and to a bottle of champagne.
Yeah, you shouldn't have it open like that drinking from the bottle, mate. Glasses help as well. It's not just the temperature. I'm kidding.
And it just clips straight on there, and then so we wanted to say, how can we manage the temperature from the rack all the way to the table with one thing. So the clip goes on the bottle, and that now is monitoring the bottle temperature. Now the idea, of course, in this particular case, if you take this Campo Viejo, it's probably 22 degrees in here, 21 degrees maybe. Then this was going to need to go in the fridge. So this goes in the fridge for a little while, and then it sends the data to the other unit, which is the main body. The bit that does the kind of the displaying the wine. Mm-hmm. Now, effectively, you can
think... They can sit on the outside of the fridge, can't it?
Yes. So,
or on the table or wherever.
We think of it as a fridge magnet, but of course it can work anywhere within 5 metres of the fridge. And it looks a bit... I mean, people call it the hockey puck because it looks like it's about hockey puck sized.
Yeah, black as well.
And it's black, yes. And it's very simple to program. You simply press one button and you follow it around the dial until you get to medium red wine, and it says 15 degrees, which is exactly what it says on the back of the bottle there, and it's currently 20.5 degrees, the current bottle temperature, as it calls to the design. So it's telling you on the display, it's telling you the target is now 15, the current bottle temperature is 20.5, it's also saying over, and the most important thing is that it's flashing red, because what colour does is associates, it makes it very simple for people. We've been associating temperature and colour for years, since we were kids, you know the taps are red, etc. So we know that this is red, and all I'm really going to do now is follow the colour. The bottle goes in the fridge, and I'm going to wait. It takes quite a while to get a bottle down 5 or 6 degrees. It might take an hour and a half.
Yeah, I was wondering about the thermal lags for these sort of things.
Yeah, it can take a while, but that's a good thing as well, because of course when the bottle comes out the fridge, it takes a long time to warm up again. What we didn't want with people doing the okie cokie with the bottle in and out the fridge all the time.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Because that where's the fun in that? No, it can take a while to chill, there's no denying it, but the good thing is when it's the right temperature, it stays there for quite a while. It's a big thermal unit, a bottle.
Yeah, although once it's down to its last half glass in the bottom, it'll warm up quite quickly.
Sure.
Or change, cool down, depending on what you're doing.
Absolutely. So you slide the clip down the bottom, and of course you might find it's going in and out of the fridge a little more. So that's the element. So for the first time, you could pretty accurately deliver this wine to the table at pretty much spot on the perfect temperature. And as I said, that's not really been possible before, unless you happen to have a wine fridge at the right temperature. And of course, lots of different wines have different recommendations. But as I said, we're not here to tell anyone what's right or what's wrong, just simply give you a baseline for what the manufacturers recommend. And there's plenty of adjustability within the product as well. You know, if you decide you want your reds a little bit warmer, you can adjust the target temperatures to affect when the colours change. And of course, you've got memories on there as well to save all your favourites.
Yeah, okay. All right. So the key thing is it's a temperature gauge, and then it's got a sort of a handheld remote control unit that tells you when you're at the right temperature, and then you can monitor it. Also, it does have, just having a look at it here, you've got some options about what you can set. So there's like white wine, light, medium, full, and a dessert wine. Reds are a full, medium, and light. You've got rosé, all rosés, just one option for rosé, which is probably one too many. No, I'm just kidding. I like rosé, guys. The guys know that. I'm just being kidding. You got sparkling wine, you got vintage sparkling wine and sparkling. And then you've got white. Well, we don't
that's
white
it, that's
wine.
That's your 10 categories.
Yeah. So you got, and they're the basic ones, isn't it? And to be honest, people can get really uptight about this sort of thing, but 10 categories is mostly where you need to be. So, okay, now that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, and the temperatures. So let's just talk a wee bit about how the wines change, because that's a lot of people don't understand. I teach people about this all the time, but I'm quite interested from your point of view, what you think.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of wine is a very complicated substance in general. Of course, it's got all the various different elements. You know, at one end you've got kind of fruit juice, and then at the other end you've got kind of tart bitterness sort of thing. And there's five or six, depending on red wine or white wine, elements to the flavour that really make a big difference. And the irony of it is that about half and half are affected differently by the serving temperature, depending on whether they're cool or warm. I'm not explaining that very well, but the example I would give is that if you take, for example, a red wine, the cooler you serve it, the more it emphasises the acidity and the tannins. Mm-hmm. And so as the temperature comes down, again, the emphasis is on the acidity and the tannins. But of course, when the temperature's too high, you tend to get too much emphasis on the alcohol, the sweetness of the wine, and the body, the fullness of the wine,
and the fruit.
Fruit sweetness sort of thing. Yes.
The way I think about fruit is fruit's just molecules that are boiling out of the wine.
Yes.
Heat something up, more stuff boils out. But also you get different flavours coming off the wine as well. You get a heavier flavours coming off at the higher the temperature, because they're just heavier molecules. They need more energy before they bubble out of the wine. So that makes sense.
You talk about it on your website, and said it's actually one of the, we tried to do it. We're working on some kind of promotional material ourselves to try and explain to people that, you know, really you've got these five or six different elements of the wine, and they're only really in tune at the temperature where the recommended temperature by the vineyard or the manufacturer. But of course, people should serve the wine the way they like it. And if they like a little bit of extra tannin, then serving it a little cooler will give them that. And if they like it with a slightly fuller body, then serve it a little bit warmer and that will give you that. But of course, what you're getting with a product like Kelvin is a little bit control and understanding. To say, okay, this is the baseline, because I now, for the first time, I can do that. I can starting from the same point. And I know that if I serve it a little bit warmer than that, it's going to be just the way I like it. Or a little bit cooler than that might be just the way you like it. But of course, for the first time, you can experiment. And rather than just tasting a bottle of wine and thinking, do you know what, I'm not sure about that one, you think, actually, do you know, if I chill that a little bit, that'll take the bitterness away. And it's quite empowering, really.
Well, no, actually, chilling it won't take the bitterness away.
No, it's fuller bodied or something, you want to bring it down a little bit. Yes, chill it a little bit, yes.
Actually, something you said about warming it up and you get a little bit more sweetness coming through.
Sure.
And I don't normally think of sugar as a function of temperature, but you're right, because acidity tends to hide sugar.
Yes.
And if you drop the temperature, you big up acidity, so you hide the sugar. If you warm it up, you lose the acidity, so you get less acidity hide, or perception of acidity, acidity hiding it. So, you know, that's true. Okay. Temperature is one of those things that if, like for me, there's the three things of serving a bottle of wine well. One is temperature. One is usually let the wine breathe. Not all wines breathe, obviously, but usually to let the wine breathe. And the third is stemware of some sort.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, I think a lot of people get too uptight about them. You just have to be within cooey.
Yes.
You know, let it breathe. Yeah, sure. It will taste better. It will soften out.
Yes.
Get the temperature about right. Fine. Get some decent stemware, but don't go crazy on it. And if you get all those three there, the wine actually can taste a lot better for virtually no real work.
Yes,
yeah. And that's, I normally tell people, you know, let a wine breathe. It's like making the wine taste like a pound better than it really is.
Yeah.
You know, if you get a £5 bottle of wine, let it breathe, it tastes like a £6 bottle of wine,
yeah,
or something like that, you know. And I think serving temperature can be a little bit more dangerous, actually. You get it right, and it will add a little bit of value. If you get it wrong, it can make a wine taste pretty decent, pretty awful.
Sure.
You know, I've had young Bordeaux at way too cold a temperature just because I'm a bit impatient sometimes. And I'm sitting there going, I've just pulled that out of the storage, but oh my God, oh well, never mind, I'll brace myself for it. So who do you think are the sort of people who buy this product?
Well, what the main place where I think people will be most interested, the people that just aren't serving their wines very well in the first place. So that might not necessarily be, you know, the big majority of the people that are listening to your podcast, because those are people who know a little bit more about wine.
Not everybody, you know.
But generally, you're the person, the general wine drinker that thinks their white should be served straight from the fridge and thinks their red should be served straight from kind of the kitchen that's next to the cooker sort of thing. They're people that will learn, that will get a great deal from a product like this. But having said that as well, I think it might well be very appealing to people who invest either a reasonable amount on wine each month, or of course have a reasonable wine cellar themselves, just to be able to get that real control in the serving temperature, as opposed to, like you said, just serving it from a wine fridge and knowing it's roughly this or that. But we believe it makes a big difference. As I said, we've proven many times, if you serve a £20 bottle of really badly, and that might well be serving it at room temperature, and you compare it with a £10 bottle of wine which is served spot on, we put our money on the one that served really well every time.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's have a look at what the temperatures are here. Okay. I'm going to test you.
Well, okay, I
see if you know your name. All right, let's go through. So we're going to do white wines.
Okay.
I'm sure you weren't expecting that, were
no,
you?
No, I wasn't expecting that.
Light white wine, what temperature?
7 to 9, so probably have 8 on there.
Well, it's got 7. Yeah. 7 okay. degrees, which is about right.
Yes.
A white wine's all about having, especially a light wine, it's about the freshness. The
yes.
So a nice cold temperature works fine. Medium bodied?
9 or something?
No, 10,
10, 10,
10
right?
degrees, yeah. So medium, but a bit more body.
Yes.
You actually want to feel that body, so that's fine. You've got to be careful with the alcohols. And full bodied?
13, I think.
12.
Okay, near there.
But you do find as the body of the wine increases, you do land up with higher serving temperature.
Yes.
You know, heavier, gutsier wines.
And I don't know about you, but that's really, you know, that I think there's an awful lot of people that have never experienced a full white wine just how it should be served.
Mm.
Because again, they're just serving it far too chilled. They're just not getting any, so the kind of beautifully complex wines that they're just not experiencing because they're serving it too cold.
And if you do have a wine that's got a lower complexity, if you do chill it down, you're going to lose that flavour. That flavour's not going to boil out of the wine or evaporate off.
And of course, there's something to be said. You're talking about it regularly, about if you take a wine down and let it come back up a little bit, then quite often you'll get a lot more than just serving it flat, because you have that element of it changing.
The change of the wine.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, dessert wines?
So I think we've got 7 on there.
8. Well chilled. So you chill desserts as far as you can. In fact, desserts and sparkling wines, you normally chill well down. You've got sparkling wine at 7 and vintage sparkling wine at... 9.
Yeah, I was going to say, just the better the champagne, the slightly warmer it should be drunk, basically.
Well, also, it's a good, you know, champagne, a vintage champagne is going to have more yeasty flavours, so it's going to be a heavier style of wine. Okay, now let's have a look at the reds. So we've got, we've got light reds. What do you think?
Right, well, I think we're going to have some like 12 or 13 there, I think.
For a light red?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know that there are that many really light reds on the market.
11. Yes. And Beaujolais.
Yes, sure.
Light red, that's quite a common light red, isn't it? So what else is there? There's, well, maybe some of the Grolo from the Loire Valley.
Fleury and stuff like that.
Yeah, or Fleury. Everybody thinks Beaujolais Village, you know,
sure?
Fleury or Morgan or Moulin Vent. They're actually medium-bodied wines.
Right,
they've got
okay.
a fair bit of guts to them, acidity and structure. They're nice. And speaking of medium-bodied, then what do we got?
15.
15, yeah, definitely. And then full-bodied?
17.
17, exactly. So again, as the body of the wine gets higher... Bit more alcohol. Trouble is, well, one of the things I find quite interesting about that is that as the body of the wine gets warmer, the alcohol's creeping up usually, because alcohol is one of the big things that give it body. And you lose acidity because acidity robs the wine of body. But alcohol, you've got to be careful, because if you warm wine up with lots of alcohol, all you do is get that nose of alcohol sometimes. And people say you can't smell alcohol, but I tell you what, if you've sniffed enough whiskey, you know you can.
Well, I think, when you talk about lots of the people that say they don't like red wines, I think if all they're tasting is really heavy red wine, really sort of really warm, it's understandable that a lot of people don't realise just how nice and simple, and often even the light wines can taste, you know?
Yeah. And the last one's rosé.
7, I think.
Yeah, you've got that well chilled, although I think there's enough. Rosé could have a couple of...
Yeah.
Okay, it's a pretty cool item, actually. I was sort of might be a bit too complicated, but it's not, actually. It's very simple. You know, it's just a simple dial, gives you a rough idea of what's going on. It's like anything, though. I bet you someone would use this for a good 6 months to a year, And then they probably wouldn't use it again because I think by then you've sort of learned what you've got to do.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take that as a criticism of the product in any way, shape or form. I think in terms of its ability to educate someone, you know, for them to go to a restaurant and say, do you know what, I don't like that, but I know if I do this, it'll make that change that might make all the difference. You know, that's a lifetime of use, of understanding that's come along with a product like this. So yes, I mean, the usage profile might be 6-9 months a year, but in terms of its use, in terms of educating someone how wine affects temperature, it's a lifetime. Worth.
And just a couple of things on thermal lag. Mm-hmm. You said it can take a while for the wine to warm up.
Yeah, certainly can.
So you've probably seen the way the wine temperature changes. Because I always think as soon as you get the wine out and you start seeing everything, all the liquid in the house, you know, especially if you've been drying clothes in the house, all the humidity in the house condenses on that bottle. And you think, oh my God, this wine must be getting really, really warm. How quickly does a bottle cool down or whatever?
A bottle, a glass and the wine together, especially when, as you mentioned earlier, when there's plenty of wine in the bottle, it's quite a big thermal unit. And it does take a long time to chill in the fridge, and it does take a long time to warm up, which is great news because again, you're not doing the okie cokie with the bottle in and out the fridge all the time. You know, once it's down to the right temperature, it can sit on the table for quite some time and be the right temperature. So the wine bottle's a big thermal unit. It takes quite a long time to change. That's a positive thing in general for the usage profile.
And something you didn't mention, but during the podcast, but I heard you talk about it. You mentioned that you can get these ultraviolet pens to check the temperature. What do they do?
Yeah. I mean, if you take the average wine drinker's equipment, if you like, which is fridge temperature and room temperature, you know, then this simple product makes it possible to serve the wine pretty much spot on. The only alternative to that would be an infrared pen where you're constantly opening the fridge door and measuring the wine and then coming back
home. How does that
20
work?
Minutes later.
Oh, infrared. Oh, it's like an infrared camera,
yes.
Type of thing.
Yeah, you know, you get the little, they're just infrared thermometers sort of things. In terms of the functionality and the simplicity, they're not telling you what the right temperature should be. They're not, you know, they're helping with understanding. They're just simply giving you a reading. Of course, that's useful if you really know everything you need to know. But we'd like to think this is just a much simpler method of getting your wine to the perfect temperature.
Okay, cool. And what is it? Let's talk about the money side of things. What does it retail for?
It's $39.95.
$39.95, so 40 quid, yeah. Okay, so it's probably not too bad if you think that, it depends on how much you spend on a bottle of wine. Okay.
Well, as I said, I mean, if you're spending, most people, if you're buying a couple of bottles of wine a week, will end up spending £100 a month on their wine, roughly speaking. You know, that's easy to do, and people have very big wine cellars, and in terms of, you know, in investment, it's a tremendous thing in terms of being able to serve wine as well as it can possibly be.
Where can they get it if they like the idea?
Well, it's available from a few places, but the simplest thing would be to go to our website. And I can give you the website address. It's mykelvin.co.uk. And the product's there. There's lots of, you're obviously going to see it for the first time because you haven't seen the product yet, but there's demonstration videos. There's Gemma, who's a lovely lady, who's going to tell you a little bit about it. And there's the ability to buy it there if it's of interest.
Perfect. All right, then, Stephen, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, bud. As Jen alluded to in the news, this will be our last full podcast for 2015. We're about to get on a big plane and fly to Australia and New Zealand and do our Christmas thing. So do be aware of that. I will put out a shortened podcast just after Find a Vino launches, and it'll be talking all about Find a Vino and what's going on there and how it's working and all that sort of stuff. So when you see the Find a Vino podcast in your podcasting software, etc., then you'll know the app's ready for you guys to download. So do have a listen to that. Just to finish up with the show, I've got our quote. And since it's a Christmas season, and I know a lot of people will be drinking a bit of wine at Christmas and having a bit of a dance, I thought this quote was absolutely superb. I drank so much wine last night, when I crossed the dance floor to get another glass of wine, I won the dancing competition. I hope your Christmas functions go better than that. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.